Safety of OnStar is now available for your car with new OnStar FMV. Add it to your car at Best Buy or visit OnStar.com for availability, system limitations, details, and a store near you.
WVOX and WVIP HD2, New Rochelle.
To Brand Talk, the only show on radio where Brandy gets personal, here on WVOX Radio 1460 on your AM dial. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and we're here to talk about brands. Your personal brand, your career brand, and even your business brand. Sponsored exclusively today by the Whitmore Group, where a relationship is a partnership. Folks, for those of you joining us for the first time, this show is about transitions and how the science and psychology of branding can help change your relationships for the better, your career or business for the better, your life for the better, so that you can become the brand you are truly meant to be. As we always like to say at Brand Talk, this is a call-in show, and it's your show, so we want to hear from you. And so if you're going through a transition, and if you are interested about your brand or maybe somebody else's brand, why don't give us a call at 914-636-0110, 914-636-0110. And let's talk about brands. Or if email is your choice of communication, why don't you give us an email at doc@brandtalkradio.com. That's doc@brandtalkradio.com. And I manned right here the email station, so you'll be getting right to the doctor. No interference whatsoever. And I like to start the show today by one of my favorite topics, and it's dressing for success, or dressing more specifically today, dressing for a job interview. And it goes like this, folks. My young adult career started in my late 20s. I got a late start because I went through my, I was an academic. And it started as an adjunct psychology professor at St. Francis College in Brooklyn, where I was teaching, of all things, psychology at the time. And this was in the late 70s. And if anybody knows anything about the late 70s, this was not a time when sartorial style was the norm. And if you were an academic, you never wore a jacket and tie. Maybe if you were in a business program, you might have, but you would never wear a tie and jacket, never mind a Brooks Brothers suit. And you just didn't know. If you were an academic at that time, you didn't know anything else but just a Banlon shirt, as we used to say, or a Lacoste shirt, a short sleeve shirt, and that was it, and a nice set of pants. We weren't in the jeans. I was teaching at St. Francis, and I think jeans might have been a no-no, so we didn't do jeans. But a funny thing happened. I used to be a big talk show radio listener, and I heard this interview from an author. His name was John T. Malloy, and he wrote a book called Dress for Success. And in this book, he basically did research where he looked at the relationship between what you wear and how people perceive you. Well, you know, as a, you know, an applied research psychologist in training, This was like music to my ears. It grabbed my attention. I mean, how could this be? I mean, people should really accept you for the person that you are internally. They shouldn't be responding to you based on what you wear. So I had I listened to this a fellow Malloy, and he was talking about things like style, the kind of suit you wear in terms of its style, whether or not it was an English cut, American cut, and European cut. Now, you got to understand, back then, a suit was a suit was a suit. I didn't know these different cuts, never mind English, American, and European. And then he broke it down also in terms of material, wood versus polyester, solid versus pinstripe versus plaid, and then further, color, blue, gray, and he was most emphatic, never brown. And he had data to back this up. And why this was so fascinating to me was because he had data. It wasn't just somebody's opinion. He actually had data on how people, in fact, would respond. So this was really, really, really great for me. So anyway, and then he further, and this really blew my mind. He not only talked about it in terms of these styles and colors and fabric, but he also then talked about what groups would in fact respond to these different variables, I'll call it, in terms of research. And so this was really, really exciting. So what were some of those findings? And what I'm going to do is we're going to go to a commercial break, and then I'm going to tell you what some of those findings are. And now a word from our sponsor, the Whitmore Group.
And now a word from our sponsor, the Whitmore Group, where a relationship is a partnership. I've known James Metzger, the Whitmore Group CEO, for years. I'm a client and a friend, and I have seen how he fights for his clients and strives to meet their genuine insurance needs. Folks, it's bad to pay for insurance you don't need, but it's worse to think you're protected and then find out you're not. You want the right kind of professionals having your back. The Whitmore Group has your back. It's where a relationship is a partnership. Their number, 516-746-4141, 516-746-4141, or visit them on the web at whitmoregroup.com and tell them Dr. Tantillo sent you.
And we are back. And so, as promised, what were some of those interesting findings that not only fascinated me, but could be takeaways to you, our listeners? The first thing was that when you buy a suit, the first suit you should probably buy would be a blue pinstripe suit because it appealed to both white-collar and blue-collar groups. And his research found that both groups rated photos of those people wearing pinstripes or even a solid blue suit more positively than those who wore a gray or gray pinstripe or brown suit. You gotta just love this. And on the other hand, the gray pinstripe suit appealed to a white-collar group and was met by distrust by a blue-collar group. And check this out and see if I'm right. You will never see an elected politician wearing a gray pinstripe suit. You may intermittently see them wear a gray suit, but for the most part, it's blue. You can, as Henry Ford used to say about black, you can have any color you want, any color car you want, just as long as it's black. My recommendation to you, my listeners, is you can wear any color suit you want, just as long as it's blue. You can, and so you'll always be safe with a blue suit. And by the way, if I'm not talking to my women listeners, women get this. There's no, I don't have to tell women how to dress. They do it so well. As a matter of fact, I am sure that I will get some calls from my women listeners telling me, right on, John, or right on, Dr. Tantillo. I've been trying to get my husband to focus on this, or my boyfriend, to focus on the importance of these things, and maybe he'll listen to you. So anyway, I just don't want you to think I'm forgetting you. I hear your pain. Anyway, then he also talked about, we're getting back to Malloy and what we can take away from this for an interview. And by the way, if you have any opinions on this, why don't you give me a call at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. Or just email me at doc@brandtalkradio.com. So then he goes into the shirts. And you can't go wrong with a white shirt. And you can't go wrong with a blue shirt. I mean, why in the old days, white was the IBM shirt. You could wear any color shirt you wanted, just as long as it was white. And is white a color? That's another talking point that we could go into. But the point I'm making here is that this was a guideline. This book not only taught you and taught a guy like me who was just coming up not only how to dress in terms of a suit, but also what kind of shirt to buy and, of course, what kind of tie to buy. And so this was all very, very, very exciting. So what I also like to say, so that you don't think I'm just kind of making this up as we go along, is that I always like to say that we do business with people we enjoy doing business with. So my point here is, what better way to get a head start on this job interview or meeting people than with clothing or a look that the interviewer will like and will respond to. So, but that's not all. When we're going to go for a job interview, yes, dress is important. But remember what our friend Malloy told us about whether or not you were dealing with blue-collar people or white-collar people and the different types of styles and how that was going to, in fact, people were going to respond to it. Well, so too, we can refine that in terms of different industries, so that in the different cultures that we decide to work in. With banking, there's a whole different way of dressing in the banking industry as opposed to the advertising industry, which are two kind of dichotomous points on a plane, huh? And then we can also take a look at the media, which is somewhere a hybrid between those two, so that if you're working at CBS or Fox or ABC, that's a whole different way of dressing than if you're dressing for an advertising agency where there might be a little bit more flair to it. But even then, what is your position at an advertising agency? If you have a lot of client contact and you're dealing with Johnson & Johnson account, which is very, very so-called preppy, you better make sure that you're wearing a pinstripe suit, and you better make sure it's a Brooks Brothers suit or a comparable brand, so that you, in fact, will not be perceived as being a little too flamboyant. As it is, you're in a field where that will happen. But anyway, the point is that what you have to do, in addition to determining what you're going to wear on the interview, assess what groups of people or what industry you will be coming in contact with. And so this is all very, very, very important. And in terms of the shirt, never, ever, ever wear a when it comes to the shirt, never forget to starch your shirt, never tumble dry it and make sure it's crisp looking. And the tie is probably best to get a striped tie. They call in the business a rep tie, R-E-P. So Google it. You'll get examples of that. And shoes, wingtip shoes. Johnston Murphy, Allen Edmonds, start there, and you'll do fine. Now, you may be saying, well, you know, John, this is all well and good, but, does this really make, does this have any really practical application? And I will give you this story that just happened to me about 3 or 4 months ago. I was in this radio executive's office, and we're talking about the way I dress, and he was in a I'll never forget this. He was in a white shirt. It was buttoned down, and of course it was starched. He did not have his jacket on, and he said to me that a young gentleman had just walked in the office, and he walked in the office with jeans and a T-shirt. And the executive, went through the motions, and said, and then towards the end of the interview, he said, "What? Can I ask a question? Why did you wear a T-shirt and jeans? Why didn't you wear pants and a jacket?" And he said, "Well, I want to go into radio where I don't have to dress up." Yeah. So the executive just smiled and said it was nice meeting him, and you know the answer to that tune. He didn't get the job. And so, anyway, this is what we try to do here on Brand Talk, is to give you some actionables so that you don't make the same mistakes that I have seen others make, and to be quite frankly, mistakes that I've made during my time in this wonderful world or in this wonderful career that I am still continuing to build. So that's it for our little segment on dressing for success. And if you have question, if you like to ask me anything about your brand or anything else, it's at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. And now what I love to get into is my winner and loser post. And I guess that will get a few people responding when I tell you who I believe is the loser of the week. But let's talk about the winner of the week. But before I do that, I like to give my little shtick, my little lead-in, and say, well, folks, each week I choose two brands that I believe have either exceeded or failed in basic brand fundamentals so that you, the listener, can implement the takeaways into your own brand life. So without any further ado, let's go into our brand loser and winner of the week. So winner of the week, let's see if we get anybody to agree with me on this one. The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Now, I got to be honest with you. I loved this series of movies. You know, when I was coming up, you know, in the 70s, this was the franchise and everybody was talking about it, especially if you were on campus and you were an academic. It had all these other implications going on in terms of our own society. But be that as it may, this franchise is a great example of not only brand loyalty, but brand acceptance. And who do they have in the leading role here is our good friend James Franco that I always like to talk about. I think he's a great brand. I just didn't think when I criticized him and his performance, not him, but his performance at the Academy Awards, I just didn't think he was the right brand for that. But that's okay. He's a great talent. So anyway, this brand still gets people to go to the movies and, in fact, go to the theaters, I should say. and really embrace this brand. And what they did differently here is what I love, and this is so great, is when you adapt the brand, which they did in this movie, and which they used the CGI tactic or methodology. Wow. That is so that the film now becomes more alive. Well, I mean, this is what you really want to do when you go brand yourself. And it's so really good. It's like you got to look at a CGI. What they did is like if you were going for a job interview, you don't go into the job interview like if you're 40 years old, like you did when you're 30 years old. There are certain changes that you have gone through and that you have incorporated into your personality that's going to give depth and wait to the interview. And so this is exactly what you want to do, or this is exactly what you want to do in an interview, and this is exactly what the good folks at Planet of the Apes did. And so I have to say my hat is off to the good director and producers of this movie and this franchise for doing that. Now, the loser. Now you got to understand something before I go into this loser, is that I'm talking about the loser simply from a brand perspective. I am not getting into anything else here, and let's just talk about this, and it's Standard & Poor's. Okay? Standard & Poor's, as you probably know, is the rating agency that downgraded the U.S. debt, stripping it of its AAA status. This has never happened before in our country's history, and it's a huge blow during these already troubled times. Standard & Poor's argues that the government just wasn't working fast or effectively enough to tackle our enormous debts, and so that the downgrade was inevitable. Well, my question then is, why did Fitch and Moody's, the two other ratings giants, they didn't do that, and they didn't think so. Their AAA ratings are staying put. So Standard & Poor's was adamant about this move for degrading downgrading, I should say, the U.S. debt. And, the Treasury Department found out that in Standard & Poor's calculations, they were $2 trillion off in terms of the estimations and calculations. Is this good for a brand, I ask? I don't think so. And, I mean, because, for us mortals, how can a company that's scolding a government for not watching its dollars and cents but missing trillions in cents? It doesn't make any sense. It's just bad brand management. Not good. And I'll say, let me go on, because I got a lot to say on this. And, one government commentator, you could understand this, is he said, Standard & Poor's move is a facts-be-damned decision. And I would argue that this decision, and this is my position, came out of S&P thinking that its own brand was in question here. And what they wanted to do is they want to bolster its brand position. In other words, by being tough with the U.S., they were making themselves look good for being tough. Okay? Even though we know what happened with Enron, and we know what happened back in 2008 with all those other things that were going on. I mean, this not good. So anyway, so that what's going on here is that it can be perceived that Standard & Poor's is actually protecting themselves or trying to say, look how tough we are by doing this move, as opposed to it being a real true assessment of what is going on with the U.S. Credit situation. So anyway, if you like to give me your ideas on this, 914-636-0110, 914-636-0110. So it's just, see, the bottom line here, folks, is that what Standard & Poor's did was basically try to protect its own brand rather than looking at the objective, scientific, rational analysis of what in fact was going on. Because they were more concerned in what people would in fact perceive what had gone on. And, another criticism was that the Treasury official also said concerning this $2 trillion era is that it in fact speaks for itself. So anyway, I just would like to say that what you want to do is when you're in the financial business, you don't want to really create commotion or controversy. So I like to say that boring is good and exciting and unpredictable is bad. And so that what I like to do is just say that brand management can never be repaired in one final swoop. And they were trying to do this. And we'll be back with more Brand Talk in just a minute.
National news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox
News Radio.
News Radio.
I'm Lisa Lucena. As Wall Street stumbles again today, President Obama meets later this afternoon with Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, a day after the Fed announced it was leaving interest rates unchanged for at least the next 2 years.
This president will not rest until he is confident that every American who wants a job can find a job. And there is no greater focus of his work, of this administration's work, than the economy.
White House spokesman Jay Carney. Right now, the Dow down 408 points. A convicted serial killer in Cleveland sentenced to die. Judge Dick Ambrose reading the jury's verdict.
We therefore unanimously find that the sentence of death should be imposed upon the defendant, Anthony Sowell.
Sowell was convicted July 22nd of aggravated murder. He hid the remains of 11 women in his home and yard. Fox News. We report, you decide.
District officials continue to work with state and building officials to determine the cause of the collapsed wall at Mount Vernon High School.
What happens next?
Janet DeFiore must appoint an independent, experienced prosecutor who can thoroughly investigate these charges.
Happens here.
The 52nd governor of New York, Mario Matthew Cuomo.
The Supreme Court has nothing to do, or should have nothing to do, with the politics.
There's always something happening on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
We are back here at Brand Talk Radio, WVOX Radio 1460 on your AM dial. My name is Dr. John Tantillo, and I'm here to listen to you. And if you're out of work, or if your career is in limbo, are you struggling over next steps? Let's navigate this transition together at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110. Or email me at doc@brandtalkradio.com. And last week at the end of the show, we were talking about a diet beer. And I could remember sitting on my parents' couch in this around 67, 68. And I'll remember the media buy was on, at that time, was WNEW, Channel 5. And it was at the 10 o'clock news. They were the first people to do the 10 o'clock news because I had to get up early for school. I was a good kid. I'll leave it at that. And every night they came on with this Gabbage's beer commercial. And it was a diet beer. And I remember seeing it and saying, who's going to drink diet beer? Anyway, Gabbage's, the inventor, he was a chemist who worked for a beer company, worked for Rheingold. He had a very ingenious process where he took starch from the beer and reduced the carbohydrates and the calories from the beer. And as I said, this sounds good, but in 1967. Very few people were worried about their waistlines and were worried about working out. And, I mean, the whole idea here was that beer tasted. The whole idea was about taste and who was going to drink a diet beer, because at that time, diet products were horrible. They were just, you know, and the kiss of death was to put diet in front of anything and on any food brand. But, and not only that, what about the name Gabbage's? That's not, it's not the easiest name to say and remember, you know, although I remembered it. I don't know how I did. I was, a very avid respondent to TV ads at the time. I always loved watching ads as a kid. I guess that's why I went into marketing, huh? But anyway, so the name was bad. This is an example of what every marketing student, marketing 101 student says, you know, a teacher talks about, and that you just never do. The name was wrong, and what we call in marketing the position was wrong. And what do I mean by position? Well, position is what comes to mind when I mention a brand's name. So if I say Mobil Oil, it's the detergent, gasoline. If I say Exxon, put a tiger in your tank, so it's got high octane. So basically what position is people's perceptions of the brand. And so I don't want to beat a dead horse. In 67, people didn't want to hear about a diet beer, and so the position was all wrong. But then what happened is Gabbage's sold the beer, actually, yeah, to Miller, and of course Miller was a marketer. And what Miller very cleverly did is they changed the name from repositioned, not changed the name, but they changed the name too, and we'll get to that in 1 second. They repositioned diet beer into light beer. Now, and then, of course, they called it not Gabbage's, but they called it Miller Lite. Now, some of you out there, my engineer friends, my mathematic friends, my physics friends, my scientist friends, are all saying, well, what the heck's the difference, John, between saying it's only words, all right? And, I mean, that separates the scientists from the marketers, doesn't it? Because when you say a light beer, and if you reinforce the concept of light beer, and you understand your target market, what do you in fact find? You find, let's look at the target market. What did the research find in terms of beer drinkers? Beer drinkers loved, despite other people who drink beverages, beer drinkers were proud of their heft or their weight, all right? So they really didn't care about their figures. So what you wanted to really do is to connect with this heavy users of beer. By the way, I believe that something, the statistic is 80% of the beer consumed in this country is consumed by 20% of the population, namely heavy beer drinkers. It's something crazy like that, all right? Maybe I'm a few percentages off, but believe me, it's something crazy like that. So the point I'm making is that what you have to do is appeal to this group. So what do you find? They wanna brag about how many beers that they have or they consume. So by the commercial that they used was less filling. They position it less filling, tastes great, less filling. That's what the advertising agency came up with. Brilliant. Because by it tasting good and being less filling, they could in fact say, gee whiz, look how many more beers I was able to hit up as opposed to how many you did. So they played right into that. And for that, that's pure brilliance. That's what you want to do in marketing. And you gotta you in fact have to take your hat off to them. And we'll be back with more of this, but now a word from, no, and now what we're going to be doing Did You Know That? And folks, Did You Know That is where I provide little known facts, which are brought center stage for your delight, amazement, and dare I say, your continuing education. And now, Did You Know That?
This is Dr. John Tantillo asking, Did You Know That? Let's travel back to the 1950s and Cincinnati, Ohio. That's when Joseph McVicker, a new employee in his family's soap company, made a connection that changed millions of children's lives, maybe even yours. You see, Joseph McVicker's uncle had invented a wallpaper cleaner. It was great for removing dirt, but times were changing, sales flagged. There was simply less need for this once popular cleaning solution. One day, the young McVicker heard that local nursery school children were using the compound to make Christmas ornaments. The same qualities that made it a great wallpaper cleaner made it an irresistible toy for kids. McVicker improved the compound. He added colors and made it dry slower, but he kept the basics: flour, water, salt, boric acid, and silicone oil. He showed it off at toy conventions. Ads ran on Romper Room and Captain Kangaroo. Today, 95 million cans a year are sold in more than 75 countries worldwide. Kids still love it. Without one man's vision, a simple wallpaper cleaner would never have become Play-Doh. And now you can say, yes, I know that. And now a word from our sponsor, the Whitmore Group, where a relationship is a partnership. I've known James Metzger, the Whitmore Group CEO, for years. I'm a client and a friend, and I have seen how he fights for his clients and strives to meet their genuine insurance needs. Folks, it's bad to pay for insurance you don't need, but it's worse to think you're protected and then find out you're not. You want the right kind of professionals having your back. The Whitmore Group has your back. It's where a relationship is a partnership. Their number, 516-746-4141, 516-746-4141, or visit them on the web at whitmoregroup.com and tell them Dr. Tantillo sent you.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Dr. John Tantillo, Brand Talk on WVOX Radio, 1460 AM on your dial. We'd love to hear from you. Well, what about, did you know that? How about, did you like that? 914-636-0110, 914-636-0110. We gave you a lot of things to think about so far. We were talking about Dress for Success. We were talking about Standard & Poor's brand and why that we felt that it was a brand loser. What about you? What about your take on some of these things that I've been swirling around here on WVOX Radio, 1460 on your AM dial, and where we want to hear from you at 914-636-0110 or at doc@brandtalkradio.com. Let's talk a little bit about this Did You Know That? And Play-Doh. And this story was recently used a beautiful effect in the Reese Witherspoon movie, How Do You Know? And in it, a character tells the story and then concludes with a great line, "We are all just one small adjustment from making our lives work." Wow. You know, I mean, sometimes spending 2 hours at a movie to get that kind of line out of it, boy, it makes all the sense in the world. And this couldn't be more true for personal branding. Often we already have a terrific brand, but there are small things that we want to, that are getting in the way of being that truly successful brand. And I don't want to just talk about me all the time. And I think if there might be instances in your life where you might have done the wrong thing or said the wrong thing, and it got you in trouble. So, the Play-Doh story is a great reminder of turning lemons into lemonades, and that McVicker was looking for a solution. And he was already in the mindset of not giving up on his uncle's product. He was on a gold mine. The only problem was that the mine was not reaping the gold anymore. Most of the gold was gone, and so we had to think of a different way of exploring what in fact he had to do in terms of the brand. And what's so great about this is when you're in at a brand transition, you have to observe, you have to listen. And when he heard that kids were using this solution in a completely different way, he adapted to it. All right, and that's what, especially today with what is going on in today's world. So, and that's what I like to call as brand readiness. Are you, in fact, brand ready to take the plunge, to make the move, to reposition yourself when you feel that, well, I've been this in the past. Well, maybe what you have to do is brush yourself off and start all over again, as my good friend Frank Sinatra used to say. So, and if you aren't ready to act and adapt your brand, you will miss something in the long run, and that's not what you really want to do. So, and by the way, what our friend here did, McVicker, was something that the Arm & Hammer baking soda had to do, right? When people stopped baking, what did they do? I remember in graduate school, every graduate student was using baking soda to brush their teeth. Remember that? And then what about the refrigerator deodorizer? All right, so these are great brands that have been able to make the transition that we have to do in today's ever-changing world. And hey, and let's not forget the Fisher Brothers. What if they would have stopped at making horse and buggies, right? Carriages, horse-drawn carriages. They took their idea and they went to GM and made Body by Fisher. This is what we have to do. If there's any message I want to communicate to you, it's this whole idea of transitioning and being able to, in fact, do that. And I just can't think of a better example than our good friends at Play-Doh for coming up with a billion-dollar company idea or billion-dollar brand idea. And not to forget, but you are listening to WVOX Radio 1460 on your AM dial. This is Dr. John Tantillo. It's Brand Talk, where you can listen to me every Wednesday from 3 to 4 in beautiful New Rochelle, New York. And please give us a call at 914-636-0110, 914-636-0110, or you can simply email me at brandtalkradio.com. So there you, in fact, have it. And do we have any callers? Yes, we do. No, we don't. Okay. So let's talk about something that I did last night. And it reminds me, what I did last night is I went to a great restaurant, but what everybody was responding to my bow tie, and which got me to thinking how I got into wearing bow ties. Now, in our book, in that book, Dress for Success, John Molloy said right up front, never wear a bow tie. The only two groups of people that wear bow ties are college professors and lawyers. So never wear a bow tie. Well, I was a college professor. I was also doing consulting at the time. So anyway, I would toggle between wearing a bow tie and also wearing a straight tie, of course, Brooks Brothers. I bought my first bow tie from Brooks Brothers. And between you and me, it took about 3 hours for me to learn it. And I am now going to give you the secret on the radio of tying a bow tie. Are you ready? It's tying your shoelace around your neck. That's it. It's as easy as that. And what you should probably never do is look in the mirror, because when you look in the mirror, that's what confuses you. But if you, in fact, just remember that you're tying your shoe around your neck, you'll be able to do that. But anyway, so back in the early 80s, I was I shouldn't brag like this, but I'm not really bragging. I'm describing. I used to go to a lot of parties with a lot of attractive models. And I went to this one party, and one week I went to this one party. These attractive-looking ladies said, you know, you just look so cute, JT, in that that bow tie. It's adorable. You look great. Now, you got to understand something, folks. I'm an average-looking guy, all right? You know, I'm 5'7" and a half, you know, and I'm not bad-looking, but I'm certainly no model in training. But leave that aside. So I get all this attention from these beautiful-looking women, and, I mean, what's there not to like? And so I said, oh, okay. I didn't think anything of it. So what happens a few weeks later, I went to a party, another one of these grand parties, and these same models were there. And they said to me, JT, why aren't you wearing one of those bow ties? And folks, from that moment on, I never wore a straight tie. Why? Not only for the intention, but it's called product differentiation. I was simply just another person with a straight tie, but I was something unique when I wore the bow tie. And I'm not saying that everybody now should go out and wear bow ties. No, or buy bow ties. I'm not saying that. It's got to work for you. And that's another one of Tantillo's ideas, or my ideas that I like to communicate, and that is to thy own brand be true. So that's what you have to do. You have to make sure that it fits within your brand. So that's my bow tie story. But let me get back to this restaurant situation. So I go, and let me tell you about restaurants. You know, some geniuses love to play golf. Now, I have nothing against golf. I'm just a very bad golfer. You know, I play a mean 140. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just such a bad golfer. So that's just not what I'm going to do. It's just not going to work. And tennis, I wouldn't mind, but you sweat a lot and all of that sort of stuff. But anyway, but tennis is good. Both are great sports. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I know my brand, and that's not it. But what I do enjoy, and my friends will attest to this, is I do love to go to restaurants, and I do, in fact, love fine wine. And being true to the Brand Talk brand, we have a caller, and I will pick this story up. Okay, caller, what's your name? What's your brand? Where are you from?
Hi, Larry Nurschel.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Good. You know what? For years and years and years, I was intimidated about the bow ties because I had asked the salesperson, how do you tie this? And
yes.
No one knew. And I've asked numerous ones.
Yes.
And then my wife works with a guy who always wears bow ties. I said, how do you tie that thing? He goes, like tying your shoe. So you just certified that.
I love it. Me. Larry, you're great. I love you. Go ahead. Yeah. Please go on. Yeah, it's that easy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I got to try that. So I'm gonna buy a few and try it. But what intimidated me further was someone was trying to show me how to tie a Windsor knot.
Yes.
And, you know, went behind me and flipped it over and this and that. And, like, I'm 6'2", so,
yes.
You know, my ties got to come a little bit below the belt when they're done.
Right.
But being 6'2", if you do a Windsor knot, it takes up more material on the top, right?
I got you. But and Larry, let me make a suggestion, too. If you go to the right stores, you can get longer ties for tall guys like you. And I know that Brooks Brothers does it. I'm sure Jay Press does it. Next time you go into a men's store, you probably wouldn't be able to get it at a department store, but you will be able to, in a men's store, you could ask and it's maybe even get a special order on that. But go ahead. But I know exactly what you're saying.
No, I'm familiar with long ties because I'm pretty savvy when it comes to dressing.
Good, good. But, oh, I didn't mean to say that you weren't. I just wanted to help you out there.
Oh, no, listen, there's no offense. I don't know everything, and I'm the first to admit it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So anyway, the problem with the long ties is you don't have the selection, you don't have the variety.
Right. That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. Well, you know go ahead, Larry. I don't mean to
cut you off. Anyway, I even got something on my cell phone, an app on how to tire winds or not, but I haven't really tried to tackle it yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's another issue about the winds or not that you should also be considered. I don't know how your weight, but if you're, or how broad you are, but if you are very, very broad-chested, a Windsor knot, because it's thicker, may in fact make you look larger, so that you might want to use a single knot as opposed to doing the full. But I'm not telling you what to do, but that's another way of getting over that hurdle.
Well, that's interesting.
So that's something else to consider. Because when I was and I did this from a practice, I used to use the Windsor knot because that's what I was. My father used to always use, and he was thinner, and I was always heavier. And so what I would do is use the single knot where it will look better. So you gotta. That's the assessment that you and your family members and yourself have to come to in terms of what looks better.
Right. All right. Well. An interesting show. I thank you for
knowledge. Thank you very much for calling. We love to have you back.
All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. So that was very good to hear from Larry. By the way, if you'd like to give us a call, 914-636-0110, we'll do that. And I just want to say that I wanted to pick up on the story that I went to the. I'm really a restaurant wine lover, and that's what I like to do, and that's how I entertain my clients. And we'll talk more about this next week on Brand Talk. Thanks for listening, and remember to always keep your brand in mind. This is Dr. John Tantillo for Brand Talk. See you next week.
Amplify your voice.
Easy to work. Press talk button.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD2.
This is a Fox News Alert. I'm Lisa Brady. Wall Street just too jittery to keep yesterday's rally going. At the closing bell, the Dow down 523 points. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso has more live.
Lisa, the word volatile best to describe what's happening at Wall Street after an up day yesterday. A fall back below the 11,000 mark for the Dow. Financials, industrials, healthcare, and utility stocks all down, fueled on the European economic crisis.
Market continues to be nervous and skittish, and it's really reacting to every single headline that you see go across tape.
Floor trader Kenny Polcari, another headline scaring investors that France is now also approaching a credit rating downgrade. Lisa?
And Jeff, again, the Dow at the close down more than 520 points. Victims' families relieved in a Cleveland courtroom. After a jury recommended death for serial killer Anthony Sowell, who killed 11 women and hid the remains in his home and yard, the final sentence up to the judge. The week-long manhunt for three siblings turned fugitives from Florida is over. Fox News Radio's Eben Brown has this live.
Lisa, the Dougherty gang, those two brothers and their sister from Florida, are now in custody in Colorado following yet another pursuit.
We had a short high-speed chase southbound to the 52, which is down in Huerfano County. Car subsequently crashed.
Kirk Yaler is with the sheriff's office in Pueblo County, Colorado. The trio had been sighted in that state, and cops there say they were warned that they could be dangerous because they were shooting at cops outside Tampa who tried to pull them over. And when they allegedly robbed a bank in Georgia, they had an AK-47 with them, Lisa.
Eben, the bomb squad called out in rural Oklahoma, southwest of Tulsa, for a possible improvised explosive device found on a gas line. They've removed it, and they're trying, with a robot's help, to render it safe at this hour. Again, the Dow down 521 at the close. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
When I Googled myself, I couldn't believe it. I've always put my clients ahead of my fees, so the last thing I thought I had to worry about was my business's reputation. I guess I just thought the internet would reflect reality.
When the internet turns on you, it can be a shock. But every day, lawyers, doctors, and other